welcome to In-Game Chat for Saturday, June 1st, 2013. This is Season 7, Episode 17. I'm Scott.
I'm James.
I'm Matt.
And I'm RJ.
And welcome to the show. If you'd like to get in touch with us, our phone number is 334-272-9228. You can find us on Twitter at In-Game Chat, as well as over on Facebook. You can email us, everyone, at ingamechat.net. We're streaming the cam feed right now through Ustream. You can find us there or hit up our Facebook page, and you can watch from there as well as join us in the chat room live while we broadcast. So hello to everybody in the chat room. And everybody watching us on the cam, everybody listening on the radio and the streams, welcome to the show. Coming up tonight, we're going to be responding to some listener mail, as well as talk about our time playing The Last of Us demo that came out yesterday, if you have God of War Ascension. We'll go over all that a little bit later on the show. But first up, look, we'll be honest with you, from now until most likely the rest of the year, we're going to be talking about the new consoles. And what we'll be getting from those and the games and everything else, but it's pretty much... Yeah, it's on a truck now, and it's that's going to be all we're ever going to talk about. That's
well,
the road.
It's a big, exciting time for now.
It's a very exciting time. It's the first time that we've ever had a as a show that we've ever had the new console releases with Microsoft, Sony, and everything else. So it's exciting, and we want to talk about again. I know we hit over this all of the last episode that we did, but we kind of want to reach back and go over it some more. The Xbox One reveal and what we know of the console. Just, you know, we don't want to beat a dead horse with it, but as the week goes on, we get new information. And kind of new insight as to what we can expect, at least on Microsoft's side. So much from Sony, we haven't really heard, but that's coming. So we'll talk about Microsoft some more. We got some new information this week. For one, the machine is region locked. We kind of expected that.
It's not a change from anything they've had going for the past several generations, right? 360 and the original Xbox were both region-locked?
Exactly.
Correct?
I thought the 360 had a somewhat region-locked, but not a hardcore, because some games, I believe you could play from, like, I think
up
Persona
to the publisher.
4. It was up to the publisher, but you know, I get the feeling like this is going to be taken out of the publisher's hands.
That isn't actually a feeling at all. That's actually something they seem to have said directly, which is not only for all apps, but for all games, they are requiring region lock.
Now, and you know who this really bites in the rear? Military.
There's a good point to be made with that, actually. I mean, I'll step aside and mention that. You are military, and you've been deployed several times over the last
10
number
years.
Of years. Yes. Even if you're deployed stateside sometimes, you can't always control exactly where you're going to be or what kind of access you're going to have to the
internet.
And that's an issue as well this time around. I caught a tweet from I believe Sessler, Adam Sessler, made some mention of it. Somebody said that exact thing that you did. They mentioned that Microsoft's apparent scheme, their rumored schemes for managing licenses, for handling the DRM situation for their games, whatever we currently believe it is, causes a very particular kind of trouble to military wherever they happen to be deployed.
If you're in the middle of the ocean on a ship, guess what you don't have? The internet.
Yeah, I mean, those are obviously very special circumstances, and it's a very particular, set of challenges that aren't as straightforward, I think, as region locking. But to possibly their credit, we'll see when we learn more information. Sessler specifically said he had information from people he couldn't name, who assured him, and he was going to assure the person he was responding to, that they did have plans in place specifically for that.
Okay.
I find it hard to believe, as much as we have talked about Microsoft's disposition, how they appear to be behaving as a company in recent years and now in recent days and weeks, their disposition as a company is probably, it is not the same thing and does not come from the same place that the behavior of their engineers and their developers, their programmers, and to whatever degree, you know, this collection of futurists they have working on all of their new hardware and software, these people do not want to disenfranchise military. They don't want to disenfranchise people in different territories and regions. So I do believe that there are solutions in place. I would like to spend some time for this show and the next before we actually get more concrete information. If we're going to be speculative, I think it's worth taking the time to have a fairly holistic view, right? It's very easy to just a lot of displeasure at people like Microsoft or in the past generation at Sony is self-reinforcing.
Right.
It's easy to keep looking back into it. And in this case, talking about how little we've heard from Sony over the last 10 days, they are, at least in the core space, perceived to be in first place, right? Barring a red shell from somebody in behind, when you're in first place, you just don't make mistakes. Make all your lines clean, handle
very
every
concise
curve, apex to apex, govern your brake and your throttle, and you just don't make mistakes. Very few people stick to that set of rules, but Sony seems to be doing it right now. And we'll talk in a minute about how they've simply just reiterated the one position they've taken over the last several months, and the one that they are digging their heels into following Microsoft's announcement. But talking about Microsoft's solutions for all of these things, I think it's fair to recognize that where the military is concerned, they've most likely got something in place. They're not... I don't actually know what that amounts to. Do you have any clue whatsoever the number of people deployed at any given time? The wars notwithstanding, but just... Like actual just like combat operations, notwithstanding.
Well, it's not even just combat operations for this region lock. When I was in Korea, I mean, I went in a combat zone, but... It's my Xbox 360 saw that I had a Korean IP address, and so if some of the demos I wanted to download, it wouldn't download. Some of the videos I want to watch, I couldn't download. Netflix, I had issues with. I mean, all these things that we just take for granted here, you know, even just being overseas, it affected me. And so that it's not just, you know, stuck in the middle of a, you know, sandbox somewhere. It's just, you know, I think it's any military member outside of the continental outside the United States. You know, it'll have some effect. And we do have, I mean, between all the branches, we have lots of people out there.
Right.
And a lot of people with time on their hands looking for an escape and looking for something to remind them of home and something to do to just, you know, and video gaming is so prevalent, you know, in military because it's mostly people our age, if not younger,
right,
who grew up on this stuff. So it's a big market.
Well, it's not a market that should be discounted at any level simply because there's an element of frustration to the fact that I already own what I own. I own the games that I own. Talking about being region locked, just from the perspective of a business, it does make some kind of sense. I am, to some degree, again, as a primarily PC gamer, I'm a fan of the No Oceans initiative. I'm a fan of the fact that it doesn't make any sense to me quite in most circumstances why a game would come out at one time in the United States, at another in Europe. It's nothing but raw information. We're not even talking about the strange little differences publisher to publisher or platform to platform. It's all on the PC, man. Come on, just figure out what you want to charge in pounds, euros, and dollars. Try to be a little more fair in that regard, by the way, because $1 does not equal 1 euro. No. I'd like to remind them. But I'm a fan of just dispensing with all of that kind of regionalism. The consoles, I'm a little more accommodating of just because we still are talking about physical goods in a way that we don't on the PC. We're talking about the inherent differences of the consoles. We already know, and we're actually quite familiar. Any given one of us have friends in every part of the world. The show has listeners
all
over the world. They're people who we appreciate because they've always made sure to provide us with that non-American perspective. And in an America, in this place, which is so driven by the development of content, whether it is games, movies, television shows, music, we are major exporters of content. And because we live in that, we're steeped in and live in the environment that produces that content, it's very easy to forget that it's restricted in terms of its distribution and its delivery in other places. Where these games are concerned under normal circumstances, I think you could take an issue with them saying the console is definitely region locked, but we leave it up to the publishers to make the final decision, or rather, we leave it up to them to decide whether they're going to take the steps necessary to allow the game to be available in all regions. It seems a little bit more, not exactly restrictive, but you have to find your way to permission rather than have permission taken away from you. But if we understand Microsoft's DRM scheme, if we understand that it exists anything like what the rumors have suggested, that their grasp at the secondary market is anything like what we've heard, then in order for that, and I don't want to make any judgments on it here because it's still just rumor, but if it's true in any way, then I don't see how they can possibly get around it without an amazing amount of effort, without region locking. Simply by saying every region needs to be handled differently. We're handling license management, right? We're handling all of that stuff virtually. We're handling account management and access to your license and the games and everything, retailer by retailer. Terms and conditions handled retailer by retailer. And we know the simple fact on the ground, legal facts, are that what applies in America, those rules don't necessarily apply in the same way in Europe. There have been a number of really good articles from a handful of really good outlets on the internet over the past several years talking about the inherent legal challenges because the EU has, for example, decided to approach what we would consider first sale doctrine in a completely different way. Those challenges, however we feel about them, are something that a company as large as Microsoft has to consider, has to deal with. It's something that all of the individual retailers do. Not exactly being devil's advocate, I'm not being pro-corporate, I'm just saying, whatever we may want, whatever we may think, these are real issues, these are real money business issues that these guys have put probably an immeasurable amount of a dollar value on. When we think about how much money they said they've sunk into managing first-party games, the hundreds of millions of dollars that they've already pledged to their own marketing for this thing, they are completely in it.
That leads to the next statement that we learned was that they're investing $1 billion into games for the Xbox One,
they insinuated first party. Is that what they did? Is that takeaway correct, or is that also considered? Are those the monetary payments? Are those the incentives given to companies to bring their third-party exclusive content over to the Xbox? Because that does make a huge difference. That's going to be expensive, enticing people away from the lucrative multi-platform release, right? I'm EA, I'm Activision, I'm Ubisoft.
The financing goes into not only new studios, but also getting exclusives for the next...
So it does, but some of it is also being designed, or being used to design internal development houses or bolster internal development, which, fantastic, it is all good. This sounds incredibly silly. $1 billion is... Right? That's with a B. That's an incredibly large number. But they lost twice that on replacements, re-engineering, and warranty service of the Xbox 360. The Red Ring of Death
cost them,
I believe, we were talking about this several years ago, it's been years since it's been a main issue, but about twice that in terms of money.
Like five, I believe it was.
Was the total?
I want to say, but I could be...
We could look at it. I thought that it was two. I could be wrong. Either way, whatever the number was, it was a whole number, and it was measured in billions.
Yes.
It's a significant amount of change, and that is something, barring anything else Microsoft has. They have a lot of money to do whatever they want. We can be certain that what they're doing is deliberate. So, I do feel bad about this, and it's mostly because I don't have the firsthand experience with the pain of region locking. I don't suffer that issue. I live in the largest video game market where currently most of my preferred publishers are located. There are still an awful lot of people stateside who never felt that transition away from Japanese developers was warranted. Right, they still lament the attraction
JRPGs
of the Japanese.
And
right,
and I'm sure there's people that still
and I don't blame
them. Stuff,
I mean, we still have people on this show. RJ plays a lot more of that style of thing than we do, which means, despite any of your personal preferences, you actually have legitimate reasons in terms of just what you like to play to prefer one console over the other, to prefer one company's
Yeah, I'll give you a case in point. Remember when Demon's Souls came out? I would have never known how that game existed had it not been for the Japanese version that was sent to us.
Yeah, that's right.
And you played on the PS3. If that thing was region locked, I wouldn't have been able to play it at all.
Yeah.
So if not for that, if not for being region free, I never would have known how good that game was, or gone on to Dark Souls later on.
Right. If we can believe that what Microsoft is doing is deliberate, and again, I didn't want to talk too much about their disposition, but I guess it's worth noting where region locking is concerned, they are being very deliberate. And I am certain that at least someone is making calculated decisions. And this system is very American-centric. It's very Anglo-centric in general, but it is very much focused on the West and America in particular. I am extremely interested in hearing about the challenges or how they plan to deal with integrating
all these things with foreign markets.
From regardless of your own personal opinions, right? Regardless of how we may feel about what they said and how they said it, and the weird look on Don Matrick's face, and the strange, awkward engineer body language of Witten, and just all of the smarmy used car salesman, you know, sort of funk that was like emanating from them during that conference. If you look at what is really happening, if you can somehow erase the men and women and how they sounded and the words they said, what they are doing here is fascinating. It's fascinating. The hardware, the application of the VMs, talk about this in the second part of our show, and just what they plan to do regionally and globally in terms of business on this thing is fascinating. Nobody's ever done anything like this. They are reaching possibly beyond their grasp, but certainly to a place where no one else is. You could argue that as things come into focus, as the picture sharpens, they each have taken a legitimate tack. It's just, we are who we are. And right now, what little we know of Sony's feels much, much better. You know, it sits on our palate much better. But I am, for good or ill, I am extremely fascinated with what Microsoft is doing from the logical, dispassionate point of view.
No, I completely understand, because we were talking about this downstairs. I mean, Microsoft is currently, right now, the focus of our conversation. And when we look at E3, for one, Sony's will not be broadcast on television.
That's right. That's something that I had somehow completely forgotten about. They have abandoned the concept of television where this thing is concerned in more ways than one.
Right. They will not be. Their press conference will not make it to television because Spike TV gained exclusive rights to everything E3, basically. But the problem with that is that Spike TV, while they've gained exclusive rights, cannot afford to ditch their primetime lineup in order to show Sony's conference, because they have it so late in the evening on Monday in the different time zones. And so they can't afford to do that. So Sony's will not be televised. Now, my point that I was going into with that was that I am... For me personally, Sony is sitting in a comfy seat at the moment. I am actually more interested in what Microsoft's going to be doing at their press conference than I am at what Sony's going to be doing at theirs. I want to say it's because Microsoft has had so much time currently trying to not crowd control, but what is the word I'm trying to think of?
Well, they're working their message an awful lot. They are handling the message. The message was incomplete.
They're having to respond so much to just the hour presentation that they haven't been able to give us any more information, basically, on the games or on the machine or anything else, which is why we get the information that we got this week from Major Nelson, who says that there will be the smallest amount of television talk for E3. In fact, he says...
Well, he was trying to be humorous, which I commend him for having any sense of humor after the last week and a half that he has had to deal with. Right. I mean, it's very, very interesting. His position is actually interesting to me.
There's nobody on Sony's side who has that job that he does.
And I'm surprised. I'm surprised that Sony has never... I mean, he's like an actual Kevin Butler. Right, like he's like something that Sony has only used as a marketing thing,
but he's a real person. That's
but
his
he's
real
a
job.
Real guy who has an enormous job. I mean, he's not just the spokesman and the mouthpiece, but he's very active and he's very responsive to people. And he has to, I have spent so... He reminds me in every way, like the community manager on an MMO forum, mm-hmm. on a community forum for an MMO, which is, like, I don't know. It's like being a lion tamer, you know? It's really... I have never viewed any one of them as anything other than having a whip and a chair, one in each hand, and trying to fight off the hordes. Like... That's what he's been doing now for 60, 70 years, it seems like. He's been at it forever.
Yeah, okay.
It must seem that long to him. He's whatever. It's a fair amount of thing, but it's interesting because when you compare, as an example, the things we have available now, you're talking about a response from a community manager
mm-hmm.
versus a response from the CEO of an entire company.
Right, because it For a while there, and still is, last week, well, the week of the reveal and last week, it didn't matter what interview he read, it didn't matter what talking head at Microsoft said anything, if Major Nelson put out his statement on his Twitter, it was like, oh, we just heard from the gospel, the book, the whatever, here's their final statement because he just told us what it is.
Right.
So it was everything. If it was coming from them, you could take it for what it is. They maybe they're speaking out of turn. Maybe they don't know. But if it came from
he has a certain amount of credibility.
Yeah. If it came from him, Larry Herb, Major Nelson, if it came from him, it was like, well, that's fact. We're done. You know, topic's closed. He just said, this is their stance. That's it.
Yeah.
So
the problem is he has...
But he's a community...
He is a community manager. And again, if you want to talk about the same relative position of someone running... Being the community manager for World of Warcraft, and as an example, has been an arduous task for all the men and women who have held it. Because they are given the official word. They are the person who delivers the message. And then the people who make the real decisions behind the scenes, they change course and don't feel it necessary to consult the community manager at all.
Mm-hmm.
It's like the president's press secretary. He's given you the word. He's delivering the word. He's come down from the mountain. He's got something to say, but the guy back up at the top of the mountain can do whatever he pleases. So when he says something, it's very interesting because it's possible that, yes, that is the final word, but it is also possible to expect something entirely different to happen.
It is, and what that difference may be, what we may get, and whatever that could happen, well, we're going to find out. It's going to get a lot... I say this, that it's going to be... the message is going to get a lot clearer. I hope that's the case, and we're going to find out in a few weeks. But when we come back, we'll kind of talk about what we might hear from them and how we should interpret it, and from Microsoft as well as from Sony, I guess. Sony's being awfully quiet. We've only heard one thing, and that's from Kaz, and we'll get to that coming up next on In-Game Chat. We'll be right back.
I think that with any PlayStation platform launch, and certainly with PlayStation 4, we want to make sure that we have the best and compelling games that we bring to our consumers and fans through both our first-party studio products as well as from our third-party partners. And that obviously, in this generation of software and hardware, is going to include a lot of social aspects, a lot of network aspects as well. But I think we've been synonymous with bringing compelling gaming experience to customers around the world, and PS4 is no exception.
That is Sony's Kaz Hirai, who was on CNBC this week and was asked specifically how the PS4 is going to position itself as a gaming machine against the Xbox One this holiday season. Emphasis, by the way, on
gaming
machine, which is what the host, what the person who asked the question did when he asked Kaz that question. That was his response to it. Not long after that is what we got from Major Nelson when he was asked, is it going to be TV talk again for Microsoft's 90-minute E3 press conference? And this is his words. I can confirm that we will have TVs or similar on stage to show the games. That should be the extent of TV talk in your E3. So that should be the extent of your TV talk in E3 is possibly. I misinterpreted this. Somebody posted this on the COG forum, and I misinterpreted it to read as we're going to talk nothing but games for our press conference at E3. And I was asked, why did I think that wouldn't happen? Because that was my response. I was like, they're not going to do that. And my response was because they haven't done that since, I think, the days of Peter Moore coming out on stage and playing Rock Band or showing off his tattoos. Everything since then has been
media related.
Here's our partnerships with our media. Here's this new deal we just struck with ESPN. Here is the Smart Glass app that we have. Here is Twitter and Facebook that you can use. Here, it's always had games, you know, but it's always also been about the things that the console can do. It's never been truly focused on just the games. So that was a misinterpretation on my part because he never actually said that. He just said that they won't be talking about TV.
But in their defense, I mean, how many people use their 360 now as a Netflix box or, I mean, really play video games on it as opposed to watching Hulu, watching ESPN, and doing it what they're marketing it towards?
Well, we made that, we did make that point last week. It's fair enough to look at that, but there are subtle differences between those three things. Right now, at the moment, the Xbox 360 is at the end of its effective lifespan for most people. There's a reason we only ever see anybody playing using one of the television apps or something like that, right? Why, it's a Netflix machine, essentially. There's a dearth of really compelling things to play on the system at the moment. That's fair. That has been the case for every other system, regardless of whether it was connected to the internet or not. Secondly, a system designed to handle a lot of different apps, to handle streaming apps and content apps, is not the same thing, not even remotely the same thing, as a system designed to handle live television, or, in a further case, something the One doesn't do, designed to handle time-shifted or fully recorded content. That's a little bit different. Those are several different things. And to look at a snapshot of what the 360 is today at this moment, well, it's full of nothing but people playing Netflix. 2 years ago, that wasn't the case.
Mm-mm.
It was full of people playing whatever it was. We used to joke about it all of the time. My friends list is full of this. Is yours? Yes. And it was always whatever game you and I happened to be playing as well.
Yeah.
It's just, it is a natural part of the life cycle. I don't think it's fair to look at a snapshot of the system and say, that's all it's about. I think they look at it and say, clearly it's very good at that. So we want the next system to be good at it as well. And it's worth noting that that's not what angered people in the first place. And as a matter of fact, this notion that they are massaging or handling the message, that they are trying to move the message possibly, that they're simply trying to fix whatever communication issues may be going on, whatever it is, I'd like to point out that I don't want them to not talk about TV at all. And I don't think the mere mention of TV on the 21st is what caused them any problems. It was the almost complete lack of any mention of gaming. Mm-hmm. And it makes people nervous. Whatever else we might be, we are people. We're presented with something that we know gets us running inside.
Mm-hmm.
We're all gamers. Nobody who isn't a gamer cares one way or the other about any of this. But you look at this and you think about your future and the things you want to be excited about, all of the stuff that you know you want to play, better looking, better playing, larger worlds with more people, more friends, more options, all the stuff I do now, but better, which I still insist would have been the best way for them to pitch their system. Everything you can do now, but
just more,
but squared and cubed with whipped cream and cherries on top, which is an incredibly good way to sell me something like that. But they chose a very specific tack, a very tight focus, and it didn't match with expectations. It didn't match with our personalities. Like, you don't know me anymore, man. Like, we used to be like this, and now we're not. So, knowing that they were so off base with their announcement, that it should have been more broad, them telling me that they're not going to touch TV at all, I think it's oversteer. I think it's overcorrection. There are still a lot of unknowns about how the media side of the system will work. Well, and if you're telling me that it's the Xbox One, it's the one solution for everything, then talk about everything, man. Give me a balanced approach and be honest with me. Above all else, Maybe asking too much.
I'm looking at you with this look of like...
I know. Be direct, I suppose.
Yeah, I know.
I'm not sure exactly what I mean to say, but if there are still questions lingering about TV, then by all means, answer the questions.
Right.
But show me some games.
You've got 90 minutes. You've got 90 minutes of a live audience, assuming commercial-free on television, national television.
Yes.
90 minutes to present your games. We already know you've got 15 lined up. Probably to show us, I believe, to show us. 8 of those exclusive IPs, or original IPs, 8 of those original IPs. And 7 of those, you know, sequels and things like that that we're going to get out of them. But, or some kind of exclusivity of whatever they get. However, to abandon what has been the talking point of your system and not bring it up,
yeah,
the TV situation, I think, is something that they won't do. I think they are going to... you have a chance here as a marketing person. Again, we have to remember, just like we said last week, that you are about to sit in on a 90-minute marketing presentation. As that, I think they need to clarify their message if they thought there was any confusion. We're looking at it from this angle, they're looking at it from another angle, and they may look at it and say, our message is very clear.
Yeah.
Why don't they get this? Our message is completely clear. How come they don't understand this? But whatever the case, I don't think they're going to avoid TV completely. I think they will talk about that. I think they will talk about what the system can do with apps and things like that. I just don't see the 90 minutes strictly focused on games. And they haven't said that it would be, just to kind of lack the TV talk.
Well, let's be fair. E3 is more... It is more than just the 90 minutes you spend in an auditorium with them trying to blow you through the back of the theater. It is more than that 90 minutes. There is another kind of message that can be delivered, and it can be... you can be spoon-fed in different ways throughout the entirety of the week. They can control things. They can decide to talk about singular issues in isolation at different points to the media, to the people on the show floor, to the journalists who are present, and to the wide world, however they want. It is a week-long thing. It doesn't necessarily have to come down to that 90 minutes, but the 90 minutes are crucial.
Mm-hmm.
Having said that...
Well, that leads me to a question I want to ask. Do you think it is, and I'd love to get the people in the chat room, I'd love to get their take on this too, just randomly answering, and we'll take a look, but do you think with this 90 minutes they get, do you address DRM and used games at some point in that time, or do you leave that to follow in the interviews later that will be going to print and everything else? Do you leave that to build up to, like, Trigg spoon-fed, like you had mentioned?
It isn't a binary choice. You lay the groundwork for further explanation. You bring it up. You don't
explain it. You just mention it.
You don't explain everything about it. You mention the most basic concepts. You, most importantly, do not recoil from the situation.
Mm-hmm.
You don't have to tell me everything in the world. Honestly, the complexities of what we've heard seem to be something that they couldn't handle in any reasonable amount of time, and it wouldn't be fair to expect them to, because Sony hasn't done it either. And it is the sausage making, okay? It really is the sausage making behind whatever DRM and secondary market control scheme these two guys have in place.
I was going to say, but even though I think Microsoft and Sony, this is their big issue at them, or I say, it's the one that I see the most threads on gaming forums is the DRM issue from both of them.
You mention it, but you promise further clarification as the week goes on. That's what you do. You do not recoil from it. It's the most important thing.
Mm-hmm.
You acknowledge it exists. You say one or two very clear things about it, things that you have probably... polished and shaped very carefully behind the scenes.
Yeah.
And you just make people aware that you are aware of the questions and that...
And they're not shying away from it.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah.
And the time has gone on now, and people are just getting kind of tense about it. So that's actually what you do. But either way, barring any other very small bits of information, barring Major Nelson handling any particular questions directly, clearly Sony intends to say nothing until E3. This is probably smart on their part. If Microsoft, they may not be able to help handling the message even further. This is a euphemism, but they can't. I don't necessarily think they're in a position to remain completely silent between now and E3. And unfortunately, everything they say, we're going to talk about. Forum goers are going to write about. Games media is going to report on, and it's where we are right now. It's where we are every year. You know, we all apologize. we're grabbing at scraps, and we're so information hungry, just as people.
I know
that we're always reaching for it, and we adore it. We adore the information.
We love every little bit that they give us, and
but the
massive amounts that come out of that from our own heads. You know,
it is in solving a mystery. Partly is exactly the same thing that makes us love games. The same problem solving, the same competitive. You know, the toil and the calculation and the fighting over contested space, the exploration, the socialization, all of those things that define you as a gamer, to whatever degree you believe in those definitions, are the reasons that we like picking at small pieces of information and trying to guess the future. So, if we can be comfortable with that, then I think we can certainly be comfortable with how much we pay attention to it. Though, having said that, look, I mean, we have a lot to gain by these systems coming out, right? You know, historically, for 15 years now, better on 20 years, when the consoles release, they represent a major jump forward in technology, but they have, up to now, been using, I don't want to say wildly different technology, but somewhat alien configurations of technology to achieve good results of their own, or results that were similar to what the PC could do. Right? 1995, PlayStation looks better than PCs.
For a bit.
2000, the Xbox looks better than PCs. For a bit. The 360 and the PS3 certainly looked fantastic, but again, they were operating on fundamentally different architectures. These machines, for lack of anything else to worry about in their hardware, for lack of any other details about what the actual guts are going to be made of, and there's been a lot of wonderful discussion about it, namely in terms of guesswork about the memory configurations. It's amazing that we're down to that point, and that people who care, because it is a thing worth caring about. It's fascinating.
It is.
It's like gearheads for cars. You know, this is like, you know, like the machine.
Oh, it's
inner
the same
work.
Thing. Yeah, it's very much like, the same thing. And what advantage might be conveyed by GDDR5 versus the DDR3? Where each one might sit. Take a second and think. There is an old anecdote, and it I always used it to illustrate why PC gamers were just such unmanageable grognards when the console started taking over the multi-platform race, like when they defined everything. And it sits in the comparison between the original Deus Ex, which, while it did get a port to the PS2 in some way, years after the fact, was the quintessential PC game. So much so that it was the thing back in the very late 90s that we all assumed, right? That all of us participating in the superior gaming machine that was the PC just assumed that this...
It's how we step forward.
This is the step forward. This is what games will be based on. When you look back, this will be the grandfather of what we're playing over the next 15 years. And it didn't happen. Because immediately, consoles came along that could handle playing the same types of games the PC could. And you saw this real push to multi-platform. When we got Deus Ex
Invisible War,
we were all just such tragic jerks about it. I mean, really, and it actually was a very good game, but it wasn't what we thought we deserved, and it was the scope and the shape of the game. It was the weird UI that was clearly designed to accommodate a controller, and it was the tight, constrained, itty-bitty little levels, right, with narrow sight lines, lots of passages, lots of bottlenecks, all things designed to accommodate the really small memory footprint of a console. Well, that's great that you've got these giant levels in Deus Ex, but I can't fit that on the Xbox. And really, this is a good game anyway. Well, we didn't want to hear it, and we were wrong to an extent. But we weren't wrong that the consoles were dictating design philosophy, right? Forget about frames per second. Forget about graphical feature sets. They simply couldn't handle the types of worlds we were ready to live in on the PC. And there was an old anecdote that you could take every level, the whole thing, the entire game world, sit outside of it in a level editor or in some kind of...
Of Invisible War.
Right, of Invisible War, sorry. And put that entire game inside of the airport level from Deus Ex.
That one level.
That one level. And that gave you some sense of the difference of scale. And we weren't very good at communicating the problem at the time, but it gave you some inkling of why we were kind of upset. See these giant worlds we lived in? Now I live in this very small world. I live in a corridor, and I lived in an open field previous. It was a bit of a thing, but... And that's persisted. It persisted all the way up to Human Revolution. If you think about, just to use another Deus Ex game, if you think about the Detroit level from Human Revolution, it was, you know, a couple of relatively open external areas in the streets, but there were really tight bottlenecks in the middle that opened up into other areas. There was no reason that had to exist. There was no reason the level needed to be designed like that. You could have had huge courtyards, enormous intersections, wide open areas if it was a PC-only game, because it's got plenty of space. And you couldn't do it on the consoles. You need a place to dump your memory and load the next area of the game in. You need a place to create a load point. As I understand it. It's fair. And I thought that was a wonderful game anyway, which tells you a lot about how good we've gotten at doing that. But...
It's still a thing.
Not after this fall, it isn't.
Yeah, but it was then.
It was still
a limitation that the consoles were applying towards the PC gaming that, you know...
It was applying towards everything.
Yeah.
They set the tone.
They sort of lowered the bar in a way.
They are welcome, in my opinion, to set the tone now. I am perfectly happy... Based on what I think I know, and what we're most likely to get out of what these things have to offer, right? Forgetting anybody's marketing bonanza, forgetting anybody's appeal or lack of as a company, but just look at what these things are and trust that the engineers and the developers who are not political, who are not marketeers, they just want to get in there and make good games. I got no problem hitching my cart to that horse. These guys look to have the capability to provide me with things that are neither gutted nor shaved down or had all of the corners sanded off. I really don't see the need to believe that I'm going to continue to have to live, like we're going to be able to live in equal space. They are very different machines.
A really first time that we've done this.
Yes, it is.
And it's exciting.
This I know, right? I mean, I can't help it. It is. This release is inherently exciting. Both of these machines have the raw capability to handle things much closer than what the PC can do. They do it in a different way. The PC is a little more... I'm well outside of my comfort zone and my knowledge bracket, but roughly speaking, the PC's raw power... These things are a little more elegant. They have to be. Mm-hmm. They're lower power devices. They got to be delivered at a lower overall cost. I'm fine with that. But knowing that they are both coming out in the same year, which has never happened, this entire industry has never been distilled down to essentially two superpower leaders. And again, I don't mean to discount the Wii U, but its timing and its approach are unique to its situation. Probably very smart for Nintendo, and they're going to do very well by that, but they're both coming out this year. They both stand to make big changes. Neither one of them is going to cause the industry as a whole to make terrible sacrifices. And how they each seem to be approaching the relatively similar hardware they've been given is really very, very different. And I feel like we actually have a better understanding of what Microsoft intends to do than with Sony, right? Like that Sony, you know, Sony has all of their dynamically allocated memory. They have a separate piece of silicon in their system that's going to be handling the encoding and the uploading and the streaming and the updating of all of the stuff on the system. That's interesting and clever and very good. It's not, you know, totally alien, but it's neat. Microsoft's approach with their VMs, I mean, I haven't talked to you about this, Matt, yet. I'm assuming that you know that's what they're doing. That the OSs that they've talked about using are essentially Microsoft's Hyper-V virtual machine technology, mm-hmm. right? Like, that's... I mean, we have to at least admit that that's neat, right? That that's really, really interesting. I've only ever known of virtual machines to sit on a server somewhere, right? One of them is my Exchange server that I used to handle, like, my Active Directory and all of that stuff. Another one might be the SQL Server. Another one might be something else. But they're all designed to sit there and look like completely distinct, 100% separate entities. And that's all I've ever really known them as. Most consumers don't ever play with VMs. Some of the Linux guys and maybe a few of the Mac guys do, but
most they do with VMs is the Scum virtual machine,
right? But that's
or DOSBox.
What they're doing now is they're taking that technology, which has only ever served to create separate, completely distinct operating environments, and move them into a place of seamless, clean, fast, you know, ice slick operation. I don't even know that they honestly can do it. It sure looks like they did, but isn't it just very interesting to watch them try?
I hope they pull it off.
Yeah, I was going to say, it's interesting, and it's, like you said, they may be reaching beyond their grasp for possibly what they're trying to do. Who knows? I don't know, but to get some more detail out of it, and I don't know how much, we won't see any of that kind of detail, I don't think, at E3. They're not going to go into that kind of in-depth. You're going to have large articles written by some of the tech blogs and things like that are really going to eat into that system and say, this is how it's working, this is what it's using, these are the resources it's using, this is how this whole thing works. I don't know a thing about virtual machines, so I don't really
need to
say. I only
know just enough that I've had to use them under several circumstances. Jeremy knows quite a bit more about them than I do, and he and I talked extensively about them. He was telling me about his history using the different styles of them.
Yeah. I don't know a thing about them, so I can't really give you any kind of comment of, yes, this is great, and I am excited about it. Maybe. I don't know. It's not for me. Obviously, Sony's not using any kind of anything like that.
No, they're not using that. They're using an approach that I don't know anything about.
Right.
They haven't even really talked about
it.
It's still under
wraps on that whole situation.
Yeah, I believe so. Microsoft's was easier to understand because it's technology they already had at hand. It was actually product that they have at hand. It's their own product that they've just turned inward and focused more on what they're already developing here, rather than selling it as a product to be used by system administrators and the server market and stuff like that. So
yeah.
I just find it all very, very interesting. And I am, regardless of my personal opinions about either one of them and how they've handled themselves over the past weeks or months, I'm extremely fascinated to see what happens when there is no more argument about what this type of gamer is versus this one, what this type of hardware is capable of versus this one. I feel, maybe wrongly, that we are close to a place where none of that has to matter. And I'm interested to see what happens when it doesn't, if it doesn't. This is my comfortable little circle of optimism right now.
Sort of like when developers are free to actually do whatever they want without the limitations of a system.
Yeah, that smacks a bit much of fantasy to me, but to suggest that there weren't constraints isn't true. There were. And what has maybe happened in the years that those constraints have been in place is possibly worth thinking about in some long-form discussion, some essay somewhere. I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
But to know that, in all fairness, it really does seem like they're in a much better place regardless of where they are, what platform they're on, or whether they're on all of them. We do all stand to profit from that. The question of stitching up a money hat for somebody so that they have exclusive content in one place or another is something entirely different. But what the machines can do, I am very happy about, because I don't think, even if I refused to participate, I think I would still profit by it.
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
No, yeah, it does. It does. It does to me anyway. But anyway, we're going to take our top of the hour break. When we come back in the next segment, we've got listener emails that we're going to go over. We've also got The Last of Us demo that James and I had played last night. We'll talk some about that. There's really no spoilers going into that, so no need to worry about it. But yeah, more of that coming up. We'll be right back for In-Game Chat. Welcome back to In-Game Chat. I think the modern music throws you guys off more than it does the...
Definitely.
The retro.
Oh, something bad's going to happen.
Yeah, I know.
This is from Kane and Lynch.
Oh. Yeah, something bad like playing the game.
Yeah, well, there you go.
Hey. I actually never played it, so I'm not sure. I only played a little bit of it, so I can't really say.
One of
really
my favorite t-shirts, though.
It is. Yeah. You still got that t-shirt?
I don't think so.
Oh. Anyway, welcome back to the show. Speaking of games and games that we played, we got a few. I know RJ has just started with New Vegas.
New Vegas. I've started playing
on the PS3.
Mm-hmm. You picked up? Is it the?
It was the Ultimate Edition that has,
so it has all the DLC.
All the DLC is included with it. It was on sale for $20 at GameStop, so I decided why not pick it up.
Heck yeah! Mm-hmm. Are you playing it on the hard mode?
I'm playing on normal. I don't know about the hardcore mode yet. I have to research. You know about
it's a setting when you first start off. It basically makes it where you have to eat and drink water. Ammo is very conservative. You have to
ammo has weight as well, correct?
Yeah, ammo. Yeah, everything has weight. The ammo has weight.
Ammo included. I think the other stuff has weight, but I believe.
But ammo, in regular mode, ammo does not have any kind of weight. So your backpack that you have is really limited because if you have a lot of ammunition, then you don't have enough weight for good guns and everything. So it really is challenging. That's how I played it.
It sounds like a lot of micromanaging. That's really managing much more than you used to.
You have to pay an awful lot more attention to certain things. You always have to pay attention to how much water you have, how much food you have. I believe your radiation exposure was somehow different in some way. I will offer you this. I played it in hardcore mode on the PC. The game, for many different reasons and in every different way, begs for modification on the PC. And I think that as the game shipped, and I think it's the same on both, on both platforms, the hardcore mode was not great, in my opinion. I was drinking all the time. I know I'm in the desert. I get that.
Sounds
but I
like
felt
real life.
I felt like it was kind of out of balance. And if you're... For the life of me, I cannot remember the name of the actual pack, but one of the guys who worked on the game released his own mod, which he thought was an appropriate and correct tweaking of all of the various different effects in the game, including the effects of hardcore mode.
The water and the
main exactly thing. What it should be. It made it a proper survival mode, and it made it much more enjoyable. As it was, thought it was a bit clunky. It was too heavy-handed in some places, not enough pressure in other places. So playing it on normal is perfectly fine.
Mm.
The real gems of the game are already in the game. The real brilliance of that game is there no matter what difficulty you're playing it on. Mm-hmm. And the problems as well. Yeah. Hardcore mode isn't going to fix the handful of problems you have.
Yeah, it sounds like with all the drinking and eating, and also goes to show with the radiation management as well. I was thinking with that. Does that make it overbalance all the...
Like I said, I can't remember about that detail. It's just the way that they're handled. Okay. The rate at which you have to deal with thirst, the rate at which you have to deal with hunger.
Mm-hmm.
The chat room points out...
sick if you don't eat or if you dehydrate. It affects your aim and it actually affects your stats.
Hmm. Okay.
I know how you like a challenge. And
I do like a challenging games, I'll get my money's worth. I don't want it done
like
3 hours or so.
Challenge or no, you bought the ultimate pack of Fallout New Vegas. You are going to get your money's worth.
Yes.
Even if you had paid full price, you will get your money's worth. I did not play any of the expansion material for that game. Paid the proper, full price of whatever it was asked of me when it first came out. And I spent, 150 hours in it, something like that. Something very Skyrim, something very Oblivion, something very Fallout 3. So you did play Fallout 3.
I did, yeah.
Did you play all of the expansion content for that?
I did most of them. I think I did 3 out of 4. I don't think I did that. I think I got halfway through that at the alien station.
Okay. Mothership Zeta.
Yeah, that sounds about right. Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Well, my understanding is that much of the expansion material for New Vegas is exceptionally good as well. I thought the base game was fantastic, though. I thought it was fantastic. And, a lot of people didn't... It seemed to fare poorly at the outset in a lot of people's minds in comparison to Fallout 3. Right? It's a totally different team making. It's Obsidian. Right? And if you can handle the quirks that are kind of inherent in their design and the sometimes very massive performance bugs and glitches that are inherent in their games, there is just, there's a river of brilliance running right through most everything that they make, right? They've made, in its own way, New Vegas reminds me of Knights of the Old Republic 2, right? Not as cleanly polished and perfect as the original game, missing an enormous amount of content, delivered to market under incredible pressure and at the last minute and without being properly finished, but nonetheless, absolutely brilliant. I don't know, and I don't think you and I have ever actually talked Fallout, but you know, where 3 is concerned, I thought that your introduction to the world was super fun, it was kind of creative, and it was interesting, and you pop out of your vault, you recognize your place in the real world, you go over to Megaton, and for my money, that's the last moment the game was very, the world was very interesting. They start you in the middle of the map, everything feels like a fetch quest, nothing feels natural, there doesn't feel like there's any honest progression. You're sent from one story element to another, but it all seems like, you know, so much sandbagging, right? Just trying to slow me down to make time. And I just didn't care for it. I didn't care that I was, I was the hub radiating out to all of the different things in the world. I felt like my relationship to the world just wasn't very solid. Good game, but it was missing something. And that really, I don't know, that humble starting point of New Vegas, that really very basic, very simple, being woken up by a doctor in a ramshackle hut on what is essentially the open desert, and being very subtly moved along my way from point to point. You haven't gotten very far. I think you said you're at Prim right now?
Yeah, I got to Prim. Like I said, I'm trying to figure out how to get the ex-sheriff to take over at Prim right now. That's what I'm trying to figure out right now.
Right. I suppose it's all there in the beginning for me, where New Vegas is concerned, right? You're sitting on that bluff at the cemetery, like overlooking like the flat desert, and you can see New Vegas, and you can see it. It's right there. And from the minute you wake up, you're on the move. You're on the pursuit. You know that's where you've got to go because you know the men who did this to you, that's where they were headed. You know that that's their ultimate goal, and you know that it's yours. And if you want to scrap with those nasty little dirty, what the whatever.
I don't want you looking at me. You know I didn't play these.
What are they called? You know I'm bad with names, and things that have names, I can't remember them very well.
The
Death Claws. Death Claws, that's what they were. Nasty things. Fallout, Death Claws. Help me out a little bit. You want to tackle the Death Claws, you are more than welcome to walk straight north.
And die.
And die. But the game doesn't lock you into an absolute thing. It's just that the nature of their, you know, the nature of their incentivizing, the nature of them moving you quest to quest, story to story, need to purpose, all of this stuff is so methodical, but you don't feel the hand at your back. And it's the kind of subtlety that makes me grin, right? I'm ear to ear when I finally realize what's being done to me, and I don't even care because I think it's brilliant. Mm. The world isn't flashy. The world isn't overbearing. The world is anything but. It's bare. And it is nonetheless still really brilliant. There are some problems later on that you'll obviously recognize in terms of how things function and how they work.
But when you're out in the middle of the desert and you like stumble across a caravan, you're like, oh my gosh, there's another person.
Yeah.
You know, because it is so barren, and it does make it a little bit, you know, Fallout 3 to me felt like, I enjoyed it, but like mutants everywhere, there's, you know, the cockroaches, I mean, just all these things just sort of really inhabiting this urban wasteland.
Yeah.
Whereas, you know, New Vegas was just so more open sprawl, where you could just be wandering around and not really see anything and just feel that desolation. And then the excitement when there is something, is this good? Is this bad? Is it going to attack me?
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I really enjoy that.
I also felt that it much more gave an appropriate feeling of people trying to claw back some amount of civilization from desolation. I really enjoyed it. I thoroughly
enjoyed
it.
Even in the different factions.
Yeah, no, very much in the different factions, all the way down to somebody in their stupid little corn farm somewhere. Like, it or their Brahmin farm, you know, all of these different things. It has all the personality it needed. It was better in most ways, in my opinion, than 3. I'll be interested to talk to you as you move through it, because it's, in my opinion, it was fantastic. I loved it. I absolutely loved it.
Okay. Well, the other game that we played, like I said, James and I have played The Last of Us demo. Matt, you haven't.
I haven't downloaded
it yet. And RJ hasn't either. But we, James went to, you can only download it if you have God of War Ascension.
No.
Yeah, that's the only way you can do it. Which
it's not on the disc. It just gives you a link to download the downloader, right? You can just get the downloader, and then the downloader will let you get the game. And so, if you want to GameFly the disc to play the demo over the next, I don't know, what, 2 weeks until it comes
out? Right, the 14th is when it comes out. So you've got until, you know, you've got a week from Friday to get your time in with it. But, you know, so you can GameFly it if you want to. If you've got a red box sitting somewhere, if you happen to have a place that rents games, you know, a brick and mortar game rental place, you can go pick it up. You can do it in the same day. You pick it up, you go home, you get it to download, then you can take the disc back. Because you don't need it after that. Once you've got it on your system, you don't need the disc to play it. But you have to have God of War Ascension on the PS3 in order to download The Last of Us demo. So James did exactly that. Got a red box copy of it. Came over to the house and we downloaded it. Went actually very quick, a lot quicker than I thought it was going to be. The download and then the install and everything. I'm not exactly sure how big it is. I want to say it's in the 6 gig range.
It was not that big.
No,
that's ridiculously large.
Why did I think that? Then?
I don't know.
It
is not a very big, not a very long demo. It is. The game has multiplayer, right? Did I just fever dream that up?
No, it's got multiplayer. They're okay. Not talking
which
very
we have
much
not heard
about
anything
that.
About.
Yeah.
I half expected it to be a multiplayer demo, but it is single player. It's a nice little section, which I imagine, based on the tone of the game and the relationship of all the characters one to the other, that is very early on. It's a very early set of circumstances.
I know I say this every time the demo comes out in my dream of reliving past gaming experiences never quite gives up, but that Half-Life Uplink demo, wish stuff like this would be a perfect thing, where in Half-Life Uplink, it wasn't the level that you demoed was nowhere in the game. It was its own little standalone thing. And I think something like this would be perfect if, or any kind of, like a game in this, vein where it's not, the experience that you have in the demo will not be in the final game. It could be a precursor to a leading up where if you play the demo, you get a little bit more backstory, a little bit more insight as to why things are in that world. And I doubt that that's going to be the case in this, but
I just told you it wasn't the case in this.
I know, but I always had that dream that maybe someday that they'll do that where they'll like throw you a bone.
It's asking an awful lot when we consider what development on games is actually like right now. It's a lot of time spent crafting a very unique experience that isn't really going to help them towards the end goal of moving the game forward. And for what it's worth, a lot of those things has become DLC anyway.
True.
But yes, Uplink was brilliant. Still Gordon Freeman, but it was almost like its own little section of the game, its own little spur off of the main game, something that you would have been doing anyway. But it happened completely on its own. It ended poorly for you. And you could simply play off, in a way, the theme that there was a lot of interdimensional stuff happening in Half-Life. And it was perfectly fine. You didn't even need to make an excuse for it. It was just sitting off there on its own. And it was brilliant. But it was more of a treat than a proper introduction to a game. And really, that's what you want a demo to be, is an introduction.
But imagine if this demo would do a proper introduction where, it the very first instance of things going awry, and that's what you play, whereas the game itself is after things, and I understand that completely.
That's actually, I don't know if you remember, that's what Starlancer did.
Yes,
Starlancer, an old space combat simulator from Digital
great
Anvil, very good reasons why all of us have boiling emotions about Star Citizen.
Mm-hmm.
Chris Roberts.
Mm-hmm. From Wing Commander fame.
Right, yeah.
Star Lancer, really, really fantastic game, really, really wonderful, really great themes, really fun to play. After its release, and this is what usually happens with these kinds of demos, is they come out well after release, had a trio of missions, I think, that took place prior to the major events that kicked off the story of the game. And so, I don't know, any more that would be monetized. Yeah. Obviously, you would sell that for $5 to $15, but it was a fantastic and really artistic way to handle a demo. But it is not in really any way cost effective. I yearn for it too. I understand. I appreciate what you want, but we're not going to get it. Just be happy in any case ever that we get a demo.
Yes,
they're actually
becoming fewer and far between.
Yes, that's exactly what they're becoming. But yes, I'm pretty sure this segment was near the beginning of the game.
It's,
right? I mean, that's what it felt like to me.
Well, it seems that way because I will say that Joel calls Ellie the girl.
Right.
Never calls her by name, just says the girl.
Right.
There's three people and not two, although I understand that they'll probably come into contact to other people who will kind of be in their group.
Well, if you look at the trailer, the woman with him, I believe it's Tess, mm-hmm. is referred to several times and talked to directly several times in the trailers.
Yeah.
At different points. So it felt very early, and it, you know, as far as the actual gameplay goes, it felt an awful lot like what you would expect until you really get down to the nuts and bolts of having to not die. And I don't know, obviously we don't want to spoil anything for the people who are trying to remain pristine, which of course they've probably already stopped listening, which that's okay, but it is not easy. If you have any expectation that gunplay is going to get you through everything, then you are wrong, if this demo is any indication whatsoever. And I was all absolutely just, I was convinced that I would start the game by turning off listen mode, which, if you're not aware, is it's
essentially
Joel's
Batman's
detective mode, I suppose.
Yeah, it's detective mode from Batman.
When the thing, like the instincts from Tomb Raider?
Yes. Very close to that. He basically moves slower, hunkers down, is very quiet, and you see some indication of where people are in the game mm-hmm. by him listening. It's fair enough compromise, I suppose, since you are playing a video game. You know, you want a main character who acts at least like he's using his senses and his resources. So I was just convinced I would turn that right off. Not going to worry about that at all.
How long did that last?
Well, I didn't even try it. I didn't even try turning it off. Like,
I just said, leave it. I mean, it's optional. You have the option of holding down one of the triggers, whatever. You have the option of holding those down, and that's how you use it. So I mean, it's there. It's optional. You don't have to actually use it. But there's also in the options you can actually turn it off, so that you know it is completely.
Even if you do hold the trigger down, it's still
so it's completely not gonna be used at all. But I was like, just leave it off. You know, it's a demo, and this is the best time to
mess with stuff,
to see all this stuff, and to you know, and to use it and see how it works, and kind of get an idea of that. And so I said, yeah, just leave everything on. And so we left everything on and went through the demo. And James played it first, and then I played it afterwards.
And I really, really relied on it a lot. I really did. The nature of the enemies, we did see after a while. They are pathing enemies. They do behave very much like you would expect normal enemies to. You only fight
until
infected.
They're alert.
Until they're alert. And you only fight infected, right? You only fight... you don't fight any typical, normal human adversaries. There's none of that. There's just the infected. And there's very different levels and degrees of infected. And each degree behaves differently and responds to different stimulus. The early infected are just gibbering madmen. And they can see you and they can still run around a lot and do all this crazy stuff. The next level... respond only to audio cues. And there are other levels beyond that that we didn't see. But how you respond to them and how they do what they do to you is very different. And so when you find them alone, that has like one effect on how you're gonna deal with them. You find them in the mix, and it really changes how you approach them.
You're given this demo is nice because it gives you a section where you have an option to fight or flight, you know, you can sneak past. Then it gives you a section where it's like, you have to, which I'm guessing is this is how the game's going to work. There are going to be sections where it's like you've got to clear the room in order
because you're escorting someone else through,
mm-hmm.
And you are. There are going to be times when you simply have to tell that person to stay put, and you have to go off and deal with all the troubles. That's perfectly fine.
Yeah.
I mean, that is a modern and much more intelligent escort mission. If I can just park the person I'm escorting in one place and go deal with whatever problem I have to deal with. But the nature of combat in this really is something that's more significant than I personally thought it was going to be. I think they're very clear that you're going to be handling a limited amount of ammunition. That, at least in the case of fighting the infected, one bullet, one headshot isn't going to be enough. And I think that's perfectly legitimate, creating a mushroom-headed, fungus-infected zombie that's a bit of a bullet sponge. I suppose you can get away with that because who knows what those are like, right?
Yeah, really.
And like I said, we didn't fight any of the humans in the demo. That's not available. But they are significantly dangerous. And how you handle each of them, like as an example, you can craft items that help you. You can craft health kits. You can craft shivs. You can upgrade your weapons and abilities in certain simple, kind of straightforward ways. And you can use little shivs that you've crafted out of broken scissors and tape or bindings, and you use those shivs to open locked doors, I imagine to break into other locked things, chests or drawers or cabinets or something like that. They're also necessary to save you if one of the types of the infected have grabbed you. Like if they grab you and you have to fight them
off. With the little dagger that you would use to fight them off?
Right. There is one of the types of infected requires that you use a shiv. The other you can simply hit and force off. But one of these requires that you use a shiv. When you use that shiv, it's done. It's broken. It's gone. It's an inventory item that's used for multiple things, as well as saving you, right? So, difficult choices, I imagine. I don't think you're going to be very cavalier with a lot of your inventory. I don't think you're going to make simple decisions with your ammunition.
Even more so on hard mode, where
there's less of everything.
Yeah, there's less of things scattered around the environment for you to find. So it really puts... This is why I looked... When I saw RJ today, I was like, I know a game that you are going to love. Because yeah. It is difficult. You put it on hard mode, you turn off all these abilities. You can turn off the highlighted... the things that'll highlight... You know how when an object's in an area, it'll kind of do the flashy thing? Something that lets you know that, hey, there's something over there for you. You can turn that stuff off.
Mm-hmm.
You can turn off the listen mode. You can turn off the gore, too, but whatever. It's just that you've got tons of options in this game to make it easy, or at least somewhat not as a daunting task, or make it...
Or easy-ish.
Painful.
Yeah. Now, it sounds like from your description that... combat in this game is going to be a last option, really, unless you absolutely have to, like the sections you said, clear out a room
right.
or something along those lines.
I would more than say that. Yeah, I definitely would say that combat is kind of a last option. We were the one room we were stuck in where there was just one of these. They're called clickers, the one that listen for sound,
mm-hmm.
Or they can't see you and have to use audible cues. We were stuck in a room where there was one kind of patrolling that area, and. When James played through the first time, he just found a way to get him out of the way so that they could sneak through and get to the next section. When I got to it, we were like, I think there's some stuff in the you can either sneak around to find supplies while they're doing that, and that's another way to try and avoid combat. If you're playing this on hard mode, you do want to sneak around, and you also want to avoid combat if it's possible.
Now, we're just guessing here. Is there something you can throw?
Yes.
Like a
yes.
rock or something from a distance, something like that?
Yeah, and that's like that's hardly unheard of.
Right.
But it's been a while since I played a game where I thought that was absolutely critical. Like, it's completely crucial that you pick up one of the things laying around, a bottle or a brick or something like that. Use it to throw and distract the enemies. It mm-hmm. is going to be a very important part of how that's done. So it's not doing anything new. The combat and engaging the enemies doesn't seem... At least, again, these things, which are, I'm sorry, they're just zombies. Mm-hmm. So they're behaving kind of traditionally, but they're taking a lot of the elements of that, a lot of the the tropes and the expectations of playing a zombie game, and they seem to be making them count for something. So, open combat is not particularly good, stealth were available, distraction all the time. It looks like it's actually going to be arduous, but in the best way, I suppose.
Although if you do distract, what we found out, as soon as, especially in the big herd, or the big group, when we had to do that, what we found out was these guys do have a pattern they go through. But if they are ever set off on their pattern, if you ever throw something to distract them, we didn't go through it too much, but it looks like that pattern suddenly becomes completely different. And I don't even know if it falls back into a pattern. I have no idea. We didn't test
that. I don't know that I ever lived long enough to find out.
Yeah, we never tested that. But that does throw them off of any kind of pattern, just as it does in any other game. But most of, most of anything else, Splinter Cell and Metal Gear, things like that, once the guards are alerted, they check it out. After a while, they go back to their stations and they go back to their simple pattern. We didn't see that happen here. Mm. We just saw them suddenly, and again, it's difficult because you're dealing with something not classified as human. So we saw them thrown off their pattern, their routine, and it never seemed like they found a new one. They were attracted to the sound, investigated. Once they were done, it put them in a different set. They didn't go back to their original rotation.
Same area though. Does it sound like a dogged persistence in that area? Because that's what it's
No. Once they were done with that area, okay. They just sort of meandered and wandered around.
Just new route.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah. Is what it seemed like. They didn't stay over in that corner. They still use the entire level, the entire area.
I was thinking if you threw another sound again, maybe eventually we'll go back to the route if you keep distracting it over and over again or something. But like I said, you didn't live long enough to go through it.
Yeah, so. Not sure.
I honestly couldn't say. It is a small chunk of the game. I will say as a demo, I don't know. If I'm not on the fence about the game. It doesn't really matter. I trust the developers to an incredible degree. I like what I think I know about the story. It's enough that I'm going to play the game. And I know that at the outset. I don't know that if I were on the fence, this demo would have sold me. I think a lot of people enjoyed it a great deal because it is great to see any amount of a game that you've been looking forward to for so long. But there's not the least question in my mind that this game is actually going to be about the development of the situation, the growth of these characters together, revelation, story, environment, all of these different things. And I'm sure that's why they chose this little chunk that they did. It was the best possible cutting away of a small piece of the game that revealed absolutely nothing. It showed you as little as possible for fear of revealing too much in any other situation at any other time.
Yeah.
And so here's a little bit of the gunplay, here's a little bit of the sneaking, here's a little bit of the crafting. The environment would not have been the one that I chose. It was at night and it was raining. Mm. So not exactly any of the things that we've seen from the videos that looked so lush and beautiful and inviting. Not its best face in that regard. Just here's an opportunity to get your hands on the mechanics. And it felt very businesslike in that sense. Mm. So I don't think it would have swayed me one way or the other. Okay. And I did not. I don't want to say that it isn't that I didn't like it. I just understand the constraints of a demo. And I say that, I feel like I have very little context for what's going on here.
Now, you mentioned there was a multiplayer aspect to the game as well, right?
Yes.
So you think?
That's what we know.
There is multiplayer.
But we don't know anything about it.
Okay. There is multiplayer. That's all we know. We don't have any details.
I was just thinking, was there anything in the game that would make you want to play this game in a multiplayer type fashion? I mean,
no.
Doesn't sound like it.
No, but I imagine that whatever the multiplayer is will be. I don't see any reason to expect the multiplayer to be different from the multiplayer we've gotten from other strictly story-based games like Tomb Raider, like Uncharted. Ah, no. Be careful there. I would absolutely kill for any other game to put on a multiplayer mode as good as Mass Effect. Mass Effect is the exception to the rule.
Okay.
That multiplayer was fantastic. And it wasn't even doing anything unique. It was doing something that had been done in 100 other games, only better than any of them. I loved the multiplayer in that game. Still love it. It's one of the most thoroughly and competently supported modes of anything, particularly coming out of something like Mass Effect.
Yeah, because there's a lot of story games I've played where I'm always asked myself, why is there multiplayer in this game? I'm not playing this for multiplayer.
It is another argument to have. I don't want to eat up too much time here. There are reasons, but I expect it to be something that has no direct relationship to the single player, with the exception of the fact that they haven't said anything about it, which obviously makes the part of my mind that's fascinated with mystery conjure up all sorts of really great ideas. But this game is entirely about the story of Joel and Ellie. No bones about it. And that's just something you don't see in the demo. The demo is about the nuts and bolts. So.
Well, when we come back, we will jump into some listener email with our final segment of In-Game Chat. We will be right back. Welcome back to In-Game Chat. I don't know what this is. I don't know if any of you have any idea, but I have no idea.
This was Kirby?
You know what? We'll go with that. This is okay. Kirby. I have no clue. No idea. But these were put in.
The chat room confirms that it is Kirby.
Wonderful. This is why we've got a great chat room. Love that. Thank you, guys. Jumping into some of the emails we got over in the past. We didn't get any this week, actually, but we did. We've gotten some emails that we just haven't had time to get to. I'll jump into Daniel's email real quick. He writes to us on the subject of FMV games, full motion video games, that seem to have vanished completely. He really just wants to know what happened to them. Why don't we see them anymore? His specific example that he uses is an old FMV X-Files game from Fox Interactive, but he figures it must have something to do with cost and just wonders what our thoughts on the situation is with FMV games.
That's exactly what it was. It was cost prohibited. I used to play Phantasmagoria back in the day, the original SWAT, the Police Quest spinoff. That was FMV originally. There was several others.
But it wasn't just the cost of hiring and directing actors and all of that equipment as well as making the game. It was the fact that after enough time, the tools to make convincing characters and storytelling, the ability to add voice acting to
polygons,
and things
models,
like that.
Yeah.
I mean, that did have its own associated cost, but the ability to make up for it with in-game assets sort of moved in, and we thought we would much rather be working with these rather than having to work off of FMV, and it began to get
the technology actually back then was pretty, I mean, it was pretty antiquated. I mean, I guess it was advanced for the time, like mid-90s.
Right.
But, I mean, you could definitely see the outline of the green screen behind the actor and the very, I mean, the scan
lines. This is also at a time, and this is worth mentioning here, they would, anybody, right? Anybody probably from the local community theater or people that were on, people who just worked around, they would hire anybody to play these parts. They were not very well directed.
Dana Plato did Sewer Shark.
Well, I mean, you know.
It was Night Trap.
Oh, was it Night Trap?
Yeah, Sewer Shark was the
other one?
Ship through the thing. Yeah,
but I mean,
Haunted House.
A lot of those, you know, were adventure games, almost exclusively.
Some of them were. My favorite was Warhawk.
Warhawk. Yeah.
Warhawk had FMV. It had like the real pilots, like two, you know, dudes yucking it up as the Warhawk pilot. But if you consider the fact that the games industry was an extraordinarily small thing at that time, it didn't actually garner a lot of respect or a lot of interest from any of the other entertainment industries. Why would television and movies care anything at all about video games? It was this tiny little upstart thing for children.
Now we have actual actors like, you know, Ellen Page and stuff lending their voices as opposed to back then.
Their voices and their
likenesses. And their likeness, yeah.
And for what it's worth, we should point out that whatever in the world that thing Remedy is working on, the thing that was highlighted very briefly at Microsoft's
Quantum Dream?
No. All right. No, that's Quantic Dream is the guys who make
Quantum Break.
Break.
That's okay.
That's what it is.
I was close.
Right? I did recognize the little girl. I did recognize the woman. She's been in several things. She was in what do you call it? With all the girls and the guys at the hospital, Seattle Grace.
Grey's Anatomy.
She was in Grey's Anatomy.
You are bad with names.
Yes,
really bad with names.
I am really, really bad with them. But the point is, I recognize her. She's a working actor. My guess would be that they're doing, at least I'm hoping, right? I hold out some small hope that whatever FMV games would be now is what they're doing in that game, is what Quantum Break is. Some interesting correlation between real-world footage, like real stuff, and actual in-game stuff. It's novel after all of this time. It's something that I would find kind of charming to see someone take a stab at. It's really neat. Hopefully that wasn't just a commercial. It was actually part of the game. Because I wouldn't mind seeing somebody do it and do it well. Mm-hmm. Our memory is that it was just... It was cheesy, terrible production values, and of no general value whatsoever. I don't think that has to be true. I think it's entirely possible for someone to come along and say, we've got all the reason in the world to take a different approach at telling the story. And that's admirable. And if someone's willing to do it, I'm certainly willing to...
Try it
Take
out.
Take a stab at it.
And the email mentioned the X-Files game. My favorite one was Gabriel Knight 2, The Beast Within, because you know the first Gabriel Knight was a pixel-based adventure game, whereas 2, they actually did the FMV, then 3, they went with polygons. So you know, as technology advances and stuff, they decided to forego doing FMV. But one of the reasons Sierra said was just it was cost-prohibited.
Right, and that wouldn't necessarily be the case anymore.
Dennis points out in the chat room that American Nightmare, Alan Wake, American Nightmare had...
I didn't play American Nightmare. Did
I didn't either, but it's apparently got some live-action scenes in it.
That's fascinating, and it's the same people who are making Quantum Break. It's Remedy.
It is, yeah.
Okay. Maybe they're on a tear with this idea. Maybe that's something they're actually looking to do.
Yeah, that leads a little bit to your hope that that's going to...
That's precisely what they're working on.
Yeah, that wasn't just a marketing thing, but that's actually going to be... actually in the game.
I think it would be fun. It's something that I enjoyed to some degree in my past, and I have fond memories of it. So, not even because it was good, just because...
It was just something that we did.
It's a powerful memory that reminds me of a very specific time.
It does.
And of a very specific kind of game design. And I would enjoy seeing somebody make work out of it again.
Yeah, one of the last ones that I ever did was the... I think it was Myst 4, Revelation. All the Myst games up until that point had full motion video sequences. Up to that point, had it in that game. They did not use it in the Myst 5 game. The other one that I really remember was Seventh Guest.
Oh, yes.
Yeah. So that and the
11th Hour.
The 11th Hour. What's that other one? It had Margot Kidder in it. Tex something. He was a...
Was it the Western?
No, it wasn't.
Tex Murphy?
Tex, is that what it is? Some detective in the future city. I can't remember what it was. Somebody in the chat room is going to know exactly what we're talking about. But, yeah, those were some fond...
Well, didn't the Command & Conquer games use live actors for any
they did.
Long time?
They did, up until, like, the Tiberian Wars recently. Michael Biehn was in it. I remember that. And, you know, they've used plenty of actors.
I would have no problem resurrecting it in some way, to some degree. I mean, it would certainly tickle the part of me that loved Wing Commander.
Lavos got it under a Killing Moon.
It was under a Killing Moon, but it was part of a series. And I can't remember the guy's name, but yeah, that's what it was. But anyway, the next email comes from Mitch Strand, a gaming accountant. He comes with an email about The Walking Dead, or more specifically, character deaths. I'm going to refrain from going over the vague details that he used for Walking Dead. Just I don't want to go into the spoiler territory there, but he's curious how we felt on that character being taken away from us. He feels that it was different from Morden Solis in Mass Effect 3. I'll say that because we've gone over this a few times on the show. We've talked about him, but he thinks it's different because it was... It was more immediate and jarring when that character was taken from Walking Dead. And to continue the conversation, he wants to know if there are any other video game deaths that we can remember that affected us on a deeper level.
See, I wonder if one of the differences between The Walking Dead
and you be careful.
I'm trying to phrase this as
be very careful.
You know, you didn't play as Morden. He was a character in your party, but it was always a third party character. You know, your interaction with him was never through his eyes. He was a member of your group.
He felt responsible,
no doubt. But I would assume, I make it more akin to Red Dead Redemption, whereas you play that character. You know, that was your dude. And then when that's taken away from you, you know, as opposed to a party member getting taken away through your own actions, through your own responsibility, I think there's more of a connection there because, you know, that is your avatar.
I don't know.
That's what I would think.
That may go some way to do that in a third-person game. In a first-person game where you don't see yourself, is there...
I don't know, man.
Is there more weight?
I think we're in danger of conflating several different things. That you feel one way about something because it's first or third person, another way because it is either your avatar or the character you've played for most of the time. I will offer this. I mean, I suppose if you absolutely must turn your ears away, the death we're talking about in The Walking Dead was warranted. And not only was it warranted, it served a purpose. In any case, under whichever of the circumstances you choose, it served a purpose. The purpose was the person you're protecting. The purpose, that was your goal. That was his goal, and it had become everything he was about episodes and episodes ago. It was the meaning. You weren't meant to be that person. That person was meant to facilitate your actions, you know, where the other characters were concerned. That you lose a character who gained something in their death. I don't know. I don't want to say it's noble, but it's purposeful, mm-hmm. right? Very much the way Warden Solus's was, but I felt bad because it was my job to protect him. He was my crew. And that relationship is going to be completely different. I don't mind losing characters, and I think this can be its own conversation, but I think that as gamers, we feel we have rights to characters, and we feel that those characters should simply always be here because I liked them once, I enjoyed them once, and I think they overstay their welcome in most places. In most games, under most circumstances, this is true of film and television as well, but games can be much more potent in this regard. Characters need to go, maybe not necessarily die, but they need to go. We become far too reliant on them. You wind up in a situation like you did with Ezio, right? Fantastic character whose place in the Assassin's Creed universe told really what turned out to be the best part of the tale, at least thus far. But he overstayed his welcome, in my opinion. It would have been far better to leave him in a confused state, having done his primary job of delivering the message across time. But we couldn't do that. We couldn't let him go. He's just so suave and so cool, and he's just so great. We love
him. And the fans like to play him, so let's...
Right. So just
keep going,
hammering away at him. Keep squeezing until we have dried him out, sucked every last ounce of possible enjoyment out of him.
Like that's Samus?
That's our strongest tendency, is that we must hold on to these things we love, because otherwise I might feel bad. But feeling bad is okay. Feeling bad is a legitimate emotion when you're that attached to people. When you're that attached to these characters, it should tell you that much more about how well drawn and how meaningful your relationship was with them. Appreciate it and recognize that it's bittersweet, and that is important because you don't necessarily have the opportunity to see them wrung out and destroyed.
Mm-hmm. And I felt if you're in a universe that you really, truly enjoy, and the characters that interact within that universe, you truly, there's a whole universe out there. It doesn't always have to be about Ezio,
right.
You know, and his tale. There's an entirety that, you know, that you could do.
Sure, and I just brought him up because it was the most immediate example.
Yeah.
But I think that closing a particular chapter by either... And I think that jumping straight to death is often, you know, we're a pretty bloody-minded group of people, casually so, inadvertently so. You got to get rid of them, so you just kill them off. That isn't the only way to go about it, but sometimes letting them step aside in favor of something else keeps the story moving, gives the people involved the opportunity to tell the tale from a different perspective. You turn the gem, you show a different facet, you give us the opportunity of doing something completely different. I think that's one of the reasons.
Sometimes I try that, though, like Metal Gear Solid 2.
You will not drag me into this with 5 minutes left in the recording. But I'm here to tell you I felt the same way, and we were both wrong.
Yes?
Yes, we were both wrong.
I have no clue. I was not there.
Kojima was right. He just didn't handle it correctly. You want to talk about that next episode? I'll talk to you about it. We're not going to do it. The point is character death serves a valuable function, and it's not something that we employ often enough.
No.
And it's supposed to be painful. If by the time the character disappears, you're wiping your brow and bidding good riddance because they've overstayed their welcome, then the mistake was made a long time ago.
Yeah.
And one of the reasons that I think people are absolutely gnashing their teeth and tearing at their own clothes and just in anguish over the whole thing about Walking Dead, one of the reasons it was so good is because we can't wait to find out how it continues and in what way, under what circumstances. It's not always bad. Like anything else, it's how it's used.
When you're invested in the character, if they do take it away, it is an emotional. If they did take away the character and you're just like, meh, whatever,
yeah,
then you have no connection to it, and I think that would be way worse. You know, that...
It requires a deft hand. It's an artistic choice a lot of times. There's a lot of psychology in it, so it's...
I wonder if it's just because, you know, games are so such a newer medium as opposed to, like, movies.
No, it's not the age. It's not the age. It's what they do to you. Yeah. It doesn't matter. However long games are around, Matt, they're not going to cause the same... they're not going to have the same effect, and they're not going to do it for the same reasons. Each of these things, which, by the way, is a very quick aside, they should stop trying so hard to emulate each other. Yeah. I think we're growing out of that in games, worrying less about being cinematic and worrying more about just being a good game. Just be a fun game. Don't try to be something else. Don't wish you were a con, right? Like, be a good game. Cinematic is for cinema, right? The best forms of episodic storytelling are for television. That's something that television excels at. Gaming is still trying to find its niche, and the fact that they haven't found it completely, the fact that we haven't defined ourselves to any degree that makes all of us happy, right? We're still bickering and fighting with each other over what it all means. Is it art, or is it just, you know, custard-minded, chuckle-headed nonsense where we just run around and shoot each other? Turns out it's actually both. That's what's so complicated, is that it's both. It's not the age. It's that we haven't even figured out what it means yet. But I know how bad it hurts when Mort and Solas goes to the top of that tower and dies. And I know how satisfied I am when character name Redacted dies sitting next to the wall and the little girl goes off and lives. You know, like... I know how these things feel, and I know that it matters to me, and I know that it feels a way that it never felt on the small screen or the big one. Well, technically, I guess the small screen, but you get my point.
Yeah, I don't have a particular character. I was trying, when I was going through this email, I was like, I gotta find something where a character death has affected me. Sadly, I don't think I've played a game where a character death has affected me. I don't think I've played a game where almost any character...
You're dead inside.
Has There's a few in Assassin's Creed, but as the chat room has pointed out, they really had no effect on the player. They did it horribly. It was shocking, but it didn't affect me on any kind of deep level. I think the closest it ever got, and it still didn't affect me. It was still more of a shock than it was a... I'm really sad now, was, you know, that bait and switch that happened in Uncharted 3.
Yes.
If you know what I'm talking about. When that happened, I was sincerely shocked and was about ready to...
Put down the controller?
And call her, yes.
Right? But can you imagine? Allow yourself for one moment to imagine.
If it had been.
If they had committed themselves to
it. I understand. I know.
Instead of being like the end of, you know, Dark Knight Rises.
All I can say is, when it sticks with you.
If they had committed, you know, that deep level, that would have been the deep level. That would have probably, that probably would have been tears. I don't know.
Then that's okay.
I know, it's totally okay. It's just that if they had committed to it, I would have hated it so much.
But you'd have loved it so much in a way you're not willing to talk about.
I know, I know. I would have. It would have been a thing. So, anyway, thanks for everybody joining us in the chat room, as well as everyone listening on the stream and even on their radios. We really, really appreciate it. As well, thanks to everybody who grabs us every week from iTunes. There is a way you can get to us, and we will tweet about that. But they're on iTunes, and however you get our show for later use, we can't tell you how much we appreciate you guys listening, and thanks for tuning in every week. Don't forget, folks, that you can join us on Twitter, Facebook. You can also check out our forums at colonyofgamers.com. And if you happen to be on Steam, we've got a Steam group there where you can join up and play games with us over there and the other listeners. Matt has a nice surprise coming later on for the Steam group, so make sure you pay attention to that and join up if you haven't already, because you might like this. Plus, don't forget to check out our Minecraft server at play.ingamechat.net. So that is play.ingamechat.net. That's our Minecraft server and our Mumble. We got a Mumble server. All this stuff can be found with our Steam group. So I want to thank everybody for joining us. Thanks, everyone. We're going to see you next Saturday, the Saturday before E3. Lots to talk about. And we'll be back next week. Thanks for joining us.